Om Agyananthamananda Sya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Prajana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakam Vitam Cha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishubhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patidanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedwaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarino Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Samataliko Pande Rupa Sanatana Raghuyago Sidviva Gopalago. Thus far we've gone over the preface, which deals with a brief introduction about Lord Chaitanya and Rupa Goswami, how Lord Chaitanya had instructed Rupa Goswami about the science of devotional service, and the definition of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In the introduction, the Mangalacharana prayers, which today is Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami's Vyas Pooj. You broke it.
Is that what I know? Indian factor is that.
Indian factor, yes.
Bhakti Vidya Purnaswami. So the Mangalacharana prayers in the introduction deal with the purpose of what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is about, as well as offering prayers and obeisances and offering benedictions. Then there is a brief summary of what the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is, and then an explanation of the Paribhasa Sutra, the main verse within the Nectar of Devotion, Anyabhilasita Shunyam Jnana Karma Dedavritam Anukul Yena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. And then in the first chapter, it goes over the six characteristics of pure devotional service. Namely, that it's all auspicious, it frees one from all sinful reactions, or it takes away all kinds of misery. It's rarely achieved. Those who are factually in devotional service or bhava bhakti, they deride even the conception of liberation. And it's the only means to attract Krishna, and it gives one unlimited or intense transcendental happiness. Now in chapter 2 it deals with the first stage is the devotional service. And here Rupa Goswami starts with a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, not in this chapter. The three categories of devotional service which Sri Rupa Goswami describes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are listed as devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in pure love of God. There are many subheadings in each of these categories. Generally, it is understood that in the category of devotional service in practice, there are two different qualities. So those are the two different characteristics, Klesha Agni and Subhada. And devotional service in ecstasy has four qualities, because it has two more qualities, Moksha Lagu Krit and Sudurlava. And devotional service in pure love of Godhead has six qualities, including Krishna Karshini and Sundarananda V-shaped Atma. And now Rupa Goswami explains that a person is classified in devotional service according to their taste. Devotional service is not simply an intellectual activity. One is considered more advanced or less advanced according to one's attraction to hearing about Krishna. The more one is attracted to hear about Krishna, then the more one is considered advanced. And generally, devotional service is a continuum over many lifetimes. One generally comes to devotional service because one has performed devotional service previously. But if one is just beginning devotional service, then it's understood that it's because of the causeless mercy of a pure devotee. In any case, as explained here, devotional service is easier for one who has a natural taste for hearing about Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than those who are too much interested in mental speculation and argumentative processes. Now, this chapter especially deals with devotional service in practice. In the beginning, of course, it deals with sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti has two stages called vaidhi sadhana bhakti and raga nuga sadhana bhakti. I think generally what happens in our society, because we don't naturally have a taste for hearing about Krishna or even for chanting Hare Krishna, therefore, generally, we make things very complicated. Just like it was mentioned the other day, there is a new movement called the Utsaha. You heard of that? Yeah. It's not they used to have the Gopi Bhava Club in Los Angeles. And other different movements, because generally devotional service is too simple for most people to take seriously, because it's such a simple process and we're so complicated, therefore we can't really believe that such a simple process could work. Therefore we don't try the simple process, we try everything else except for the simple process. For instance, if we simply chant Hare Krishna, then it's said that one can get all success. But it seems too easy for most people. Because I was talking to that Mataji, and she said that people are attracted to this new club because for so many years they've executed sadhana bhakti, but they didn't get any benefit from it, apparently. So they decided to try something else. And then she said that even some leaders within ISKCON, they've also seemed to be inattentive while they're chanting Hare Krishna, etc. So therefore, how can we expect by the process that people are generally following, how can we accept or expect that we're going to make any progress? So better to try something different. I remember one time one of our original 11 gurus, he said, where do you get all the nectar from? In other words, he was trying to figure out, he thought, now I've become a guru, a spiritual master within ISKCON, therefore, according to the books, a guru has all the mystic powers and is situated in love of God. So therefore he thought, well, I must be situated in love of God because they appointed me guru, and therefore I must have all the mystic powers. Of course, he was joking with me a little bit about that. But he was wondering that if I'm so elevated, how come I'm not experiencing transcendental bliss? And therefore he tried chemicals in order to induce a higher state of consciousness. That didn't work either. No, it didn't work either. In any case, the point is, the process, if it's so simple, why don't people accept it and experience it? The real point is, Arjuna, he said in Bhagavad Gita, Chanchalam Himana Krishna Pramati Balavadridam Tasyaham Nigrahamanye Vayur Iva Sadiskaram, that the mind is restless and unsteady and very easily disturbed, and to subdue it, it seems to be even more difficult than trying to control the wind. So our mind is generally disturbed. Why? Because we've been in the material world since time immemorial, and since then we've simply been disturbing our minds, trying to figure out where to enjoy and how not to suffer. And we've been doing that since time immemorial, so to expect that immediately our minds are going to be very peaceful and satisfied and we're going to understand, that's not the process of devotional service. It's not possible, because all these doubts and desires, they're covering our consciousness, and because they're covering our consciousness, therefore we can't experience or perceive things properly. And because we've been striving in a certain direction since time immemorial, therefore we have a tendency to keep on going in the same direction. Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti is recommended duty. Of course, in the Western world, there's a problem with duty also, because we're quite uncultured. People think that doing duty is very dry and you can't really get anything out of it. Basically, we've been brought up in an atheistic culture which doesn't really believe in any laws behind material nature, especially restraining or controlling or occupying the senses in something other than sense gratification. Therefore, we've been trained up since birth, practically speaking, that sense gratification is the goal of life and the only means to obtain real happiness. And if there is some other activity, it's simply a sentiment or illusion that some people have invented because they can't actually engage in the real activity, which is sense gratification. So with such a training, which reinforces our illusions that we're already in, it's very hard for us to accept the fact that we should actually be dutiful, as Bhaktivedanta Purnamaraj is noting in class. Duty means duty towards other people. It means that, not that, for instance, in the Western world nowadays, or I guess all over the world, not only the Western world, I guess there's nothing but the Western world, practically speaking, that the idea is not so much duty as rights. Everyone wants their rights. But in the Vedic culture, it's not a question of rights, it's a question of duty. And if everyone does their duty, then automatically rights are taken into account. But if everyone's demanding their rights and no one's doing their duty, it won't work. Everyone wants something, but they don't want to give. Therefore, because the teachers don't know what their duty is, and they only want to do what they only get their rights. Rights mean some money or some pension or some permanent position on the staff. The managers, they don't know what their duty is. They only want their rights. They want the right to exploit the people as much as possible. The Vaishyas, they don't know what their duty is. They think they have a right to just make as much money as possible. And the Shudras, they just want to enjoy sense gratification. They don't know what their duty is either. So because no one does their duty, therefore there is no question of controlling the mind. Because there's no, practically speaking, the only restrictions that are imposed upon people are due to the fact that there are no restrictions. And if there are restrictions, it's only due to fear, generally. Fear of becoming put into a situation which is unpleasant. And the more people eliminate their duties, people think they're becoming free. So we have a situation, people think they have a right to kill their own child, they have a right to kill animals, now they have a right to kill people who are too diseased, and in the future people think that they have a right to kill the old people. Because no one really knows what their duty is. So here it says that Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti means to employ the senses or occupy the senses in Krishna conscious activities in order to invoke bhava. The whole idea of our activities is to invoke our natural love. So it's called devotional service in practice, but it's actually not really practiced because that love is just dormant. And that love is spontaneous. It's simply been covered over. So there's nothing really to practice. It's just a question of activities which will uncover that love. And then when it's manifested, then we're back in our original position again. Prabhupada gives the example of a child. A child apparently has to practice walking, but actually the walking propensity is already there. Just by a little practice, so-called practice, it walks. It learns to walk. And the other example that Prabhupada uses is that that under the spell of material nature, we're all said to be crazy. Prabhupada put out a little book at the beginning. It was called Who is Crazy? Practically speaking, we're all crazy. But the question is whether what the devotees are doing is that crazy or what everyone else is doing is crazy. Srila Prabhupada was very fond of pointing out that when he had one servant and he was in his chemical factory, and I think he had sold some medicine illegally, and Prabhupada was called in front of the court in order to face charges. And while he was in court, there was one doctor who was being tried. The doctor, he had a wife, and the wife was having an affair with his servant. So one day he called his servant into the operating room and chloroformed him. And then he performed an operation on the servant. He cut him up into little pieces. Put all the little pieces into a box. And he was taking the box out and the blood was dripping from the box. So a policeman arrested him. And he was being tried in court for murder. So he pleaded he had a barrister who was a European barrister, and he pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. And therefore the prosecution called an expert psychiatrist in order to testify. So the psychiatrist, he testified, "My dear judge, I've examined so many different patients since I've been a psychiatrist, and my judgment is that everyone is crazy." So if you wanted to excuse him, because he's also crazy, everyone's crazy. He's a person, so he must be crazy too. So on that basis, if you want to excuse him, you can do that. Prabhupada would always point this out as an example of that everyone is crazy. And he used the same example also because right after his client, the verdict came down that he'd be hung. And so his lawyer came over to him and said, "Don't worry, I'll get you free by appeal." The Prabhupada said, "This is the high court. This is the ultimate court. There's no appeal." But still his lawyer is coming over and flattering him. Prabhupada used the word flattering him. "But don't worry, now you're going to be hung, but I'll get you free by appeal." In any case, anyone who identifies themselves with this material body to any extent, to that degree, were in madness. And therefore, the psychiatrist has a process by which he's supposed to free people from their madness. Similarly, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is the process by which we become free from our madness, and when we come back to our original consciousness, then we'll understand who Krishna is and who we actually are, what our real identity is. And what is that process? Offer Mangalarti in the morning, to refrain from certain material activities, offer obeisances to the spiritual master, and to follow many other rules and regulations. And then it's mentioned that Narada Muni, he mentions in the 7th canto, 1st chapter, verse 32, that, "My dear King Yudhisthira, one has to fix his mind on Krishna by any means. That is called Krishna consciousness. It is the duty of the Acharya, the spiritual master, to find the means, ways and means for his disciple to fix his mind on Krishna. That is the beginning of sadhana bhakti." So it is not that it is a very complicated affair, that devotional service is a very unclear, kind of vague process. No, the whole process is somehow or another fix the mind upon Krishna. Anyone who's actually fixing their mind upon Krishna by performing devotional service, they won't have any problems. But anyone who's performing devotional service and then not fixing the mind upon Krishna, then they won't have any idea why they're performing devotional service. Therefore, it's called Krishna consciousness. That is, we're supposed to become conscious of Krishna. So anyone who's wondering where all the happiness is when we become conscious of Krishna. And there's no happiness without becoming conscious of Krishna. Therefore, if we're doing even very seemingly exalted service, but our consciousness is not on Krishna, then we're not in Krishna consciousness. And if we're doing seemingly very menial service, but our mind is actually becoming fixed on Krishna, then we're actually in Krishna consciousness. We're getting the result of the activity. Therefore, there's no really material qualification or disqualification. There's no seemingly better or worse service. The only good and bad is whether or not my mind is becoming fixed on Krishna or not. So Lord Chaitanya, being the Acharya, Mahaprabhu, therefore he's given us a process how to fix the mind upon Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And if we chant Hare Krishna properly, then the result is that we should think of Krishna. It is not that I chant Hare Krishna and there has to be another process in order to think about Krishna. Otherwise, Lord Chaitanya is just wasting his time. Why didn't he just give us the process to think about Krishna? Why did he waste our time by giving us the Hare Krishna mantra? Now, the Hare Krishna mantra is, according to him, and since he's God, he probably has a good insight into what's going on. Since he knows everything past, present, and future, he probably has a good clue what's the best process. Therefore, he recommended by chanting Hare Krishna properly, then automatically the mind will think about Krishna, his name, his form, his quality, his pastimes, the loving exchanges, his associates. Everything is there in the holy name. The only problem is we don't believe that, and therefore, even while we're chanting Nanaragaha, we have so many other things that we want to do or think about, or so many other processes. Rather than that, we make it very complicated. And nor do we necessarily develop the proper attitude. Trinada pi sunichena tura iva sahishnuna amanina madadinena kirtini aksidahari. That is being humble, being tolerant, and being appreciative of others. And even if we come to that platform of becoming humble and tolerant and appreciative, then often people want some material result from their advancement. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam Nadjanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajigit Isha Kamaye, that he didn't want any of these things, material enjoyment, material position, material wealth, or even liberation from material entanglement. He simply wanted a haituki bhakti, unalloyed, loving service to Krishna. Therefore, the Hare Krishna mantra is exemplified by Ayananda Tanuja Kinkaram Patitanam Vishame Bhavambudo Kripaya Tavaparapanka Jastita Dali Sadrisham Vichintaya. That the Hare Krishna mantra is exemplified by the attitude of simply wanting to our consciousness being picked up to the level of Krishna consciousness. If that's our prayer, our desire, by chanting Hare Krishna, then that's the actual result. Becoming progressively more and more conscious of Krishna, being able to spontaneously remember what Krishna looks like, being able to remember his associates, being able to remember the activities, and if we not only remember them, but actually to feel their presence, because their presence is of the nature of bliss, and so the bliss that we're looking for, the loving feelings that we're looking for, because there's nothing in the spiritual world except for exchanges of love, and love in the spiritual world means transcendental pleasure. It is not that there's one thing called love, another thing called pleasure. Well, there's no question of becoming aware of Krishna factually without becoming aware of the transcendental love, which is actually transcendental pleasure. That the very mood of the residents of Vrindavan, loving Krishna, that is their happiness. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came for three reasons, he wanted to experience three things. Does anyone know what those three things are? Yes. Relationship. That Radharani had for Krishna. Yeah. And what else? You want to experience the love that Krishna has for Radharani. And at the same time, the qualities that Radharani perceives in Krishna when she experiences his love. So certainly, that is the happiness that everyone's looking for also. It's not just Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to experience that. That's the happiness that everyone can experience. That is, our own natural loving tendency, loving propensity towards Krishna will bring us, that is our happiness. That is the pleasure that we're looking for, and at the same time to experience Krishna's love, and the love that Krishna associates have for Krishna. And to experience their qualities that they have. That is the source of all the different pleasure that we're looking for. Same thing as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to experience. That's what we're supposed to actually try to experience also. So to become aware of the Hare Krishna mantra means to become aware of all those things. As it says in the Bhagavatam, there is no greater obstacle in developing love for Krishna than to think that something is more pleasing than developing love for Krishna. Because, in other words, if we can get that experience of what it's like to chant Hare Krishna and actually experience transcendental happiness from doing so, to become aware of the resonance of Vrindavan and Krishna, and to experience their love for Krishna, and to experience how that is transcendental pleasure, when we become aware of that, then we'll develop faith in the holy name. And since chanting the holy name is the process of the Yuga Dharma, that is the method by which we can make spiritual progress. And that transcendental ecstasy, or bhava, that is the process by which our heart becomes purified. By experiencing that bliss, as it says, Yatai damso, samrido ganira basmat sat krute tata, yanagni sarvakarmani basmat sat krute. Yatai damsi samrido ganira basmat sat krute juna, yanagni sarvakarmani basmat sat krute tata. As the blazing fire burns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes all the reactions of our previous activities. So our whole misconceptions, the whole pushing of our senses and mind towards certain materialistic ideas and activities, that gradually dissipates as we become ecstatic, as we become conscious of Krishna and feel the transcendental love and ecstasy that Krishna and his associates are experiencing. That purifies our heart of our misconceptions and the pushings, and we become purified, and that's called progress in devotional service. Naturally, we become more conscious, more aware of the things that we had, ideas that we had before. We see things more clearly. And at the same time, there is a natural enlivenment. And because we become naturally enlivened, we become attracted because of experiencing the higher taste. Therefore, we want to do the same thing more. And what is that same thing? We want to chant Hare Krishna more. So what is the result of chanting Hare Krishna nicely? Is that we'll want to chant more. Kirtaniyak Sada Hari. Now, Sadhana Bhakti is divided into two things, Vaidhi and Raganuga, and Prabhupada explains Raganuga in a very simple way. Vaidhi is when there is the impetus for performing the activity is by scriptural injunctions or the order of the spiritual master. And Raganuga means that even without the scriptural injunctions or the order of the spiritual master, one is still attracted to perform the activity. That's called Raganuga. And the example that's given is that one may be asked to perform Mangal Arati, one may get up in the morning simply out of duty, but later on one may develop a taste for worshiping the deity, and even without being instructed, one may decorate the deity in so many different ways. So that's called Raganuga. And the example of Vaidhi Bhakti that's used is Pariksit Maharaj. He says to Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear king, if you want to be fearless in meeting your death next week," oh, this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Pariksit Maharaj. "My dear king, if you want to be fearless in meeting your death next week, then you must immediately begin the process of hearing, chanting, and remembering God. If you can chant and hear Hare Krishna and always remember Lord Krishna, then he is sure to become fearless of death, which may come at any moment." In other words, the main impetus for Pariksit Maharaj, according to Shukadeva Goswami, to hear and chant about Krishna is to become free from fear. So trying to become free from fear means that there is some desire to be fulfilled, and therefore is under the realm of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. This is a verse from the Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishra Hari Shotavya Kirtitavya Stra Smartavya Chetatavayam. That one should hear about, one should chant about, and one should remember Krishna, and this will free one from all kinds of fear. And why is one fearful? Prabhupada says, because if one is not in Krishna consciousness at the time of death, then one actually doesn't know where he's going in his next lifetime. There are 8,400,000 species, and one may enter into any of those species if one is not a devotee of Krishna. Now, there are so many rules and regulations, and therefore, how do we know which rule and regulation we're supposed to follow? We may agree that I'm in the realm of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but there are so many rules and regulations. Therefore, the Padma Purana says, "Smartavyak Sadatam Vishnur, Vismartak Na Jatu Kinshit, Sarvavidhi Nisedyasyor, Etyor Eva Kankara." That all the rules and regulations are meant for two things, one vidhi and one nisheda. Vidhi means what we're supposed to do, and nisheda means what we're not supposed to do. And the Vedic literature will find so many vidhi, so many positive activities we're supposed to do, and so many nishedas, so many things we're supposed to avoid. But the one vidhi that includes all the other vidhis is to always remember Krishna. And the one nisheda that includes all the other nishedas is to never forget Krishna. Therefore, if we always remember Krishna and don't forget him, then we fulfill all the vidhis and all the nishedas of all the other, of all scriptures. Therefore, Prabhupada writes here, and as in other places, that one should always try to mold the activities of our lives in such a way that we will constantly remember Vishnu or Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. That is the most basic of all the regular principles. Good management is to arrange things in such a way that everyone will always remember Krishna. Good management doesn't mean to make elaborate plans for it. As Prabhupada used to point out, sometimes devotees, they make elaborate plans how to get dal and rice and chapatis. And they take that as quite a good management plan. That if they can somehow or another easily and effectively get dal, rice, and chapatis, then their management, they're considered to be good managers. But here it mentions that the purpose of managing or arranging things should be to help us remember Krishna as easily as possible. That this regular principle is applicable to all the varna as an ashrams. That the purpose of the brahmacharis, the grihasthas, the vanaprasthas, etc., all these different varnas and ashrams is simply to help us easily remember Krishna and not forget him. Of course, there's a material side to it, because to the vanas and ashrams in order to fulfill the necessities of life. One has to work. A real necessity of life is to get some, first of all, to get something to eat. And there may be some necessity of life to covering the body so it's not too hot or it's too cold, etc. But the real necessities of life are quite simple compared to what people think the basic necessities of life are nowadays. The real necessity of life, which is to get something to eat, that they neglect. Because they have faith that modern society will provide these things. That they'll always be able to go to the grocery store, they'll be able to buy their loaf of bread and get their milk. And therefore they're not worried about eating. They think it's all going to be supplied. Prabhupada gave the example of the communists when they took over the eastern countries. They told all the people living in those countries to go to the church and pray to God for bread. Unlike most countries, well, I guess the developed countries in the Western world, or the developed countries in the world, means basically speaking that they don't worry about their bread. They worry about computers and television and the internet. They worry about millions of things, but they don't worry about their bread because the bread comes from the store. The milk doesn't come from a cow, it comes from a container that you can pick up in the store. So they don't worry about these things. They worry about millions of other things. But in the more simple countries, people were worried about their bread. Therefore they would go to church and they pray to God, please give us our daily bread. The communists, they told the peasants, now my dear peasants, go to the church and pray for your bread. So the peasants went to church and said, my dear God, please give us our daily bread. And they came out of the church and the communists said, my dear peasants, so did you get any bread? And they said, no, dear communist friends, we didn't get any bread. So then the communists said, well, why don't you ask us for the bread? So the peasants, they go, my dear communist friends, please give us our daily bread. And so the communists, they already had the trucks waiting with all the bread, and they come and distribute bread to all the peasants. And then they ask the peasants, who is better? Your God is better, or we're better? So they said, oh, my dear communist friends, you're better because you give us the bread. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that if I was there, I would have stood up and said, you rascals, you said that you're giving us the bread, but where do you get the bread from? Anad bhavati bhutani parjanan anasambhava jagnad bhavati parjanyo jagna karma samudbhava. That all living entities subsist on food grains, and food grains come from rain. And rain comes from the performance of sacrifice. And sacrifice is born when people actually do their prescribed duties. These prescribed duties, karmod brahmod bhavanvidi, Brahmakshara Samudbhava Tasmat Sarvagatam Brahma Nitya Jagne Pratishtitam. Prescribed duties are found within the Vedas, and the Vedas spring from the Supreme Lord, or come from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the all-pervading transcendence is situated in the acts of sacrifice. In other words, even to get our basic necessities, we have to perform sacrifice. We have to sacrifice, meaning we have to live according to the laws of nature. The laws of nature explained within the Vedas. And by doing so, gradually the Vedic system is that we can develop faith in the Vedas. In other words, they're supposed to be practical. The main problem in modern society is, number one, people don't know what the Vedas are. They don't even know about the Vedas, nor do they understand how the Vedas are actually practical. They have faith that the atheistic scientific culture that we're brought up in is actually giving us our necessities, that there's no need to bother ourselves about some supernatural powers or laws of nature or anything that's beyond what we're experiencing. Especially if one lives in a city, then things like stars and sun, sunlight, air, people don't think these are very important. They think that they can live in a skyscraper and breathe air-conditioned air and simply have a picture of the sun on the wall and live under fluorescent lights, and that will be sufficient to. What they don't realize is that 10% of the world's population, practically speaking, is living that way because they're exploiting the other 90% of the world's population. And believe it or not, the other 90% are not overjoyed that the 10% can live like that artificially. Therefore, sometimes they get angry and they do things which are surprising to the 10%. Why are these people not happy being exploited by us? Don't they realize how noble and that we actually have God on our side? God has given us the power to exploit them. Why don't they do it happily? Why don't they just be exploited happily and accept their position that where they're supposed to suffer so we can enjoy? After all, that's what we were taught in school, and that's what it says in the newspaper. It must be true. And if they don't believe it, then we have our weapons, our advanced weapons, which are all got by God's mercy. And anyone who doesn't accept it, we just send over our airplanes and we do away with them because they were demons anyhow. So such a civilization, they may believe is going to go on forever, but it doesn't last very long. The Romans thought like that. The British thought like that. The Muslims, everyone, all these civilizations, they always thought like that. And then they disappeared thinking like that. The purport is that there are laws of nature, and the laws of nature are arranged in such a way is that if one lives according to them, then the basic necessities of life are supplied, like air and sunlight and rain that are necessary to grow the food. And when we eat properly, then we have some brains in order to understand things properly, and therefore we have some energy to perform the activities which are necessary to make spiritual advancement. And when we violate the laws of nature, we have no brains to understand things properly. We may think we're eating food, but it's actually not food. And even it seems to be like food, but it'll simply agitate our minds, agitate our senses, disturb our health in such a way it makes it extremely difficult to be able to hear things properly. Even if one is fortunate enough to come into contact with the right source, but it'll seem to us like the wrong source. And the wrong source, which will describe how to become more of an animal in the material world, how to become more of a, develop more beastly qualities, will think, well, this is right in the direction I'm heading for, it must be true. Only good people are as animalistic as we are, and all the bad people are peaceful and happy, and they don't really know what life is all about. Some of them even believe in a God. They even believe in laws of nature. They claim that such persons are the basic principle of what's keeping society from progressing. They think that if they can do away with all the rules and regulations and just become an animal, a completely irresponsible animal, that's actually what the civilization is meant for. Therefore, people have no problem killing their children. They have no problem killing animals. They have no problem killing other people if it so-called makes them happy. And if anyone comes along and says that these things are not very nice to do, then people think, oh, these people are reactionary. They're uneducated, primitive. Of course, this is simply due to lack of training. lack of education. But we should understand, at least for ourselves, these things, that there are rules and regulations, and nirvana and ashram are meant to train us so that by following the laws of nature a little bit more closely, it makes it a little easier to think about Krishna. Although the whole purpose is to always remember Krishna and never to forget him, but if we follow the rules and regulations of the Vana and Ashram system, then it just makes it that much easier to remember Krishna and not to forget him. If we can get our necessities of life very easily, just by growing some food and living simply, then it makes it much easier to hear and chant about Krishna. Our minds are not so much disturbed by the anxiety whether or not we can actually get something to eat. Even in the most advanced civilizations, so-called civilizations, the most advanced countries, what are people's primary anxiety? Their primary anxiety is that they're worried whether or not they'll keep their job. And if they can't keep their job, if they can't get the money, they may starve. That's all it's basically their anxiety. They can't keep their house, and if they can't keep their house, they won't be able to keep their wife or children. They won't be able to get something to eat. So it's not that they have some other anxiety, but basically speaking, they have to make money. In order to make money, they have to become a slave, a sudra, for some other person who may be in the same anxiety. And all it boils down to a few people who are controlling the main resources, namely who's ever controlling the food production or some other production. They control everyone indirectly through these methods. Although people think that they're free to do what? They're free to work in order to pay for their house, the mortgage on their house, and pay for the grocery. That's what they're free for. But they're not free. They're not free enough to understand how to actually become free from the restraints, their conditioned life, of misidentifying themselves with their body and their mind. That's where we're really slaves of our senses and our mind. That they're not free to cultivate knowledge how to do that. Instead, anyone who's trying to do that, they're branded as a cult member or a cult leader or a fanatic or... And if such movements become too prominent, then their freedoms are taken away, because the people who are actually controlling things, people producing cigarettes, liquor, intoxication, slaughterhouses, illicit sex, these people, they lose their money. And who pays for the politicians? It's not the people who are chanting Hare Krishna. We're not paying for the politicians. The people who have interests. And what are the interests? So they can keep on making billions of dollars and whatever, or trillions of dollars in whatever they're doing. Therefore, we should understand these things, that the Vana Ashram system is ultimately meant to help us remember Krishna and not forget him. So if we can simply do that, chant our rounds very nicely, take prasadam nicely, be happy in Krishna consciousness, then practically all our problems are solved. And if we try and make things too complicated, nor will we be able to follow all the complicated rules and regulations of anashram, but nor will we be able to live peacefully in the material world. Therefore, we should try to understand how simple Krishna consciousness is and accept the parts of the Vana and Ashram system which are most applicable to ourselves in the present day and age. And what is most applicable? Somehow or another, if we can live simply as we can live, then the better we can live. And of course, simple means not that I think I'm living, I'm not growing any food, therefore still I have to get food. Even if I'm not spending my energy to grow the food myself, still I have to get it somehow or another. That means I'm going to have to do some work. In any case, if I'm not growing it myself, then I'll feel dependent on others. that feeling of dependency will be there, and therefore instead it will be much more difficult to feel ourselves dependent on Krishna. Someone who's growing their food in the country, they feel dependent on rain. And therefore, if they have some connection, that they know that the rain is connected with the performance of their duty, their consciousness, their devotional qualities, their devotional activities, or even the Vedic rituals, if they know that, then they'll feel more dependent on following the laws of nature in order to get the basic necessities like rain. And they know that with the rain they can grow food grains and they can live peacefully and happily. They can chant Hare Krishna. If we understand how by chanting Hare Krishna also our material necessities in the form of rain and sunlight and all the other basic necessities, the demigods will be happy to supply to us. Therefore, we'll be able to understand how the chanting of Hare Krishna has both material and spiritual benefits. It's not simply a sentimental chant to divert our minds from the reality of this material existence. Actually, the chanting will bring us into the reality of how material and spiritually things actually work. Any questions about this? Comments? Yeah. Calling out the divinity. Yeah. Means that devotional service is a gradual process. That it's not something we can force artificially. Because first of all, we have to find out what to be done, then we have to find out how to do it, and then we have to practice. And because our tendency is we can only learn a little bit at a time, and we can only practice a little bit at a time, therefore our realization will come a little bit at a time. Now if we think it's going too slow, I really want it a lot faster, and I don't really want to learn what the process is too deeply, and I don't want to practice too much, but I want the result, then the only result will be we'll get cheated. If someone comes along and says, well, I have a quick way of doing things, you don't have to really go through the gradual process, I have a quick way. So therefore, he has a better way than Krishna has. He has a better way than Krishna's representatives have explained. They have a better way. So if we accept that, then it must be cheating. Krishna says, Kalainatmani Vinati. This knowledge will develop in the due course of time, gradually. Krishna has to see that we're sincerely trying to understand and follow, and then gradually he'll give us intelligence according to how consistently and how enthusiastically we're engaged in devotional service. He'll gradually supply us with more and more knowledge. And as he sees that we're properly utilizing that knowledge to make it more and more advancement, then he'll also gradually purify our consciousness by revealing himself to us. But if someone is impatient, someone wants to do something outside the realm of actual what Krishna's conviction is that he's trying to give us, the knowledge he's trying to give us, and the enthusiasm that naturally comes from following the proper process, then the result is that one will simply become deviated. It's called sahajya. It's a new thing.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, because we've been trained up. It's take this and everything will be cured. Take this pill and all the symptoms will go away that you had, and therefore everything will be all right until the next symptoms appear. And then you take another pill. If that doesn't work, then you just cut out from your body whatever went wrong. You place it with something plastic. Generally, it may take lifetimes, or if we accept the process and take it up in this lifetime, just take up this lifetime. We just have to understand what the process is. Yeah, of course, that mercy is explained in the Nectar of Devotion. That mercy is you come into the association of devotees and you find out what you're supposed to do. That's the mercy. In that verse, Brahmande Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev, Prabhupada explains that mercy comes, the Bhakti Lata Beach. That means that you've come into association with devotees and you hear about the process. And you become inspired to follow it. That's the Bhagavan. A fortunate person, he'll come in contact with the devotees and follow the process. So that following the process, that's the mercy. Not that there's some other process. Otherwise, you know, if a pure devotee, he loves everyone, why doesn't he just walk around and just zap everyone with... So why, you know, he doesn't like my face, therefore he didn't give me any mercy, is it? No, the mercy comes from understanding what the process is and becoming inspired to follow it, either by seeing others' examples or by hearing from them and then understanding things clearly and then following it. Then Krishna will give us his mercy. He wants to give mercy to everyone. But because we don't want to accept the mercy, we think that there's some other way of getting it. Therefore, Krishna can't give us the mercy. He's explained what the process is and how to get it, and then he very happily gives it to us. But we think, well, I don't want to do that. I want to get it some other way. Therefore, we don't really have faith in Krishna, and we don't really have faith in Krishna's representative. We have faith in something else. And it's not only the Western world, because the Western world is. But even during Bhaktivinoda Thakura's time, he mentioned 18 major apasampradayas. Those are the major ones. Of course, the Bals, the Prakriti Sahajiyas, the Garanganagaris, the Atibati Abhajas. There's so many different deviations. So, of course, in the Western world, we also deviate in so many different ways. But it's all based on the same thing. We don't want to follow the actual process. We want to follow some other process. We want all the results, but we don't want to go through the austerity. Therefore, our hearing is simply meant to inspire us to perform the necessary austerity so that we actually develop consciousness of Krishna and become detached from our material conception. So hearing is meant to inspire us to perform the tapasyas which are necessary so that we can actually become aware of Krishna. And of course the major tapasya is to fix the mind upon Krishna. Brahma, he simply sat on a lotus petal, a flower, for some hundreds or thousands of years and fixed his mind upon Krishna. But we can't do that. We don't have thousands of years, nor do we have a lotus flower to sit on. Nor do we have the capacity of Lord Brahma. Therefore, our main business is to chant Hare Krishna and to simply learn how to do that nicely in such a way as we actually become conscious of Krishna. So if we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're not becoming conscious of Krishna, it's not that we should stop chanting Hare Krishna, but we should try to readjust our lives and our chanting in such a way that we actually become conscious of Krishna. Now the japa itself is austere compared to kirtan, because we're listening to ourselves and we have our own conception. We may not even like to listen to ourselves. We may get bored listening to ourselves chanting. Or we may think, well, listen to that person chant. You know, what a drag. But I'll think of something else. But in when there's kirtan, and somehow or another we get inspired, we start jumping up a little bit or hearing it, or it goes on long enough and our mind gets fixed on chanting, then we experience some enlivenment and enlightenment or whatever. But without practicing japa, then we won't really be practicing trying to fix our mind upon the holy name. Therefore, when we get into the kirtan, we won't necessarily take advantage of it. Even during the kirtan, our minds will be all over the place. But by even if we're not so successful in chanting japa, but just by practicing trying to fix our mind on Krishna while we're chanting japa, then when we do get into kirtan, then we may have a better chance of actually becoming conscious of Krishna during the kirtan. And of course, if we become conscious of Krishna during the kirtan, then that same ability to fix our mind upon Krishna we should try to utilize in japa. We can also become ecstatic when we're chanting japa. We can also remember Krishna when we're chanting japa if we just chant nicely. Chanting nicely means to actually happily, without anxiety, ask Krishna and his Srimati Radharani to kindly engage us in their loving service. So when they see that sincerity, then we'll remember Krishna and we'll become more and more absorbed in feeling Krishna's presence and remembering his qualities, etc. And that is how they're engaging us in their service, by helping us remember them more and more. And of course, in order to do that, in order to focus our mind on Krishna, if we dedicate our activities to Krishna, then it's much more likely that we'll be able to remember Krishna too while we're performing the activities, and during japa too. We'll see if the purpose of whatever I'm doing, whatever activity I'm doing, is to actually become conscious of Krishna. And therefore, the most direct way of becoming conscious of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, when we're doing that, we'll also be able to become conscious of Krishna. But if we're not conscious of Krishna during the most direct way, the most direct method of becoming conscious of Krishna, where is the opportunity of becoming conscious of Krishna during the indirect method, a little bit more indirect, by dedicating our work to Krishna? Or, on the other hand, if we dedicate our work to Krishna, become conscious of Krishna, and get a taste for becoming conscious of Krishna by dedicating our work, then naturally, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we'll also understand what the purpose is to become conscious of Krishna. Yeah. Different stages. I mean, ultimately they're completely vanquished, but at certain stages they're almost completely vanquished, because that's just one verse. Then the next verse says, Evam prasana manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavad tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayate tatara jastamo bhava kama lova jayastaye cheta eta navidam sitam sajay prasidate. So as one becomes more learned in association with Krishna and his devotees, then not only they're almost completely destroyed, but they do become completely destroyed. But there's a state where they're just almost. And the state where they're almost completely destroyed, then our previous habits and our previous conceptions don't interfere with our devotional service anymore. Although they may still be there in the background, but they no longer interfere with our devotional service. But before that, when it comes to the state of nishtha, then they do interfere sometimes with our devotional service. Anything else? Okay, thank you for coming. Grandharaj Nectar Devotion Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Bol. Happy Lord Nityananda.